Welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. Now let's begin.
Fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I'm your host this week. My name is Chris Lockhart, and joining me on the line is my co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Decent. How's it going, Kevin?
It's going good, Chris. It's going pretty well. I think we're almost warm enough to call this the Pop Culture Pub and Grill.
And, yes.
Bust out the grills, get outside, get some charcoal going.
Yep, definitely open up the patio, that's for sure. So a couple show notes before we get started here. We are having some technical difficulties with our Skype, so I apologize if at some point we have to cut off the recording. We'll try and do the best we can. There's some issues. And also, our other co-host, Jason, may be joining us at some point for tonight's recording. But he may not. I'm not exactly sure. But we'll carry on. All right, for this episode, we are talking about Image Comics. Now, when people, think comic books, especially if you're a comic book fan, the big three now, and I would say since the launch of Image Comics, has been Marvel, DC, and Image. There's certainly a lot of other companies out there, but I would say that Image has definitely cemented itself as in one of the top three positions for sure. And early days, like there was even a time when it was the number one publisher. Okay, so let's. Kevin, what are your earliest memories of Image Comics?
Earliest memory of Image has got to be Wizard Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
I was already, it's funny to think of it now, but I feel like part of my personality was already, my current personality was already there because I found a local comic shop in my town. I had a long box that I was buying way more than I should have, of mm-hmm. course, because, we always do. Especially as a kid, I was like, oh, geez. All of a sudden one week, 10 books come in all at once. You're like, ooh, I wasn't planning on buying 10 books today.
Yeah.
But I was already looking into, I want to know more. I want to know the history of comics. I want to know about the writers, the artists, the research and the details and all. And there wasn't anything. And, the Wizard was pretty much the first one I saw, and looking back, I realized that there were other things. Comic Scene magazine was more of like, here's the movies and TV shows and other properties. A lot of like a comics journal or whatever, I wasn't old enough to really read and understand and and get into. Plus, that would be a special order thing. But all the comic shops, and especially all the like magazine racks at stores, started carrying Wizard out of nowhere. So I bought, issue 3, 5, and then I think 7, and from then on I had all of them for years. I think until it was obvious that they became a movie magazine, but that was around the 200s maybe, or somewhere high in their count. But it was, I could find out all about comics, all about what was going on, start looking at it as collections, find out stuff about the artists, the writers, everything. And out of nowhere, they start talking like, hey, here's a new comic, here's a new comic, here's a new independent comic. I was like, well, this sounds cool. And they look cool. And I'm the right age for this kind of stuff, too. I think a big part of Image was this generation I think we're Generation X, technically,
mm-hmm.
that are children of the baby boomers. There's a lot of us, too, that all hit the perfect age around the same time for this kind of comic to come out. And everything sounds so cool. Youngblood looks so cool. Spawn looks so cool. Wildcats looks so cool. And then you're like, well, I'm just buying them all. And buy them all I did.
No, that's awesome. My earliest memories of Image Comics, because I'm sure I must have read the Wizard magazine. I did know of it. Like what was happening, right? With all these, you know, top artists from Marvel leaving. That part really devastated me at the time. Like when I first learned that, you know, Jim Lee, who was my favorite artist, was leaving the X-Men, my favorite comic book. I was like, why? Like, why would you do that? And then to find out all these other artists, because, I mean, like, even Rob Liefeld, you know, back in the day, you know, when he started on New Mutants, it was different. It was kind of unique for the time, and I was really drawn to his art. You know, and Todd McFarlane, you know, launching his own Spider-Man title. I mean, he had been on Amazing, but then Eric Larson took over Amazing, and he was great at it. You know, like, I when I heard all these guys were leaving, on the one hand, I was devastated that they were leaving Marvel and leaving, you know, all these books that they helped, you know, either revitalize and launch or continue on. But at the same time, I was also fascinated that they were going to be creating all these new titles, you know, like with these new characters, especially Jim Lee. Like I think it must've been Wizard that I seen it in, where they showed like the different characters he was developing. And I was just, you know, awestruck by it. And, you know, in the early days, yeah, I bought a lot of Image Comics for sure. Yeah, there's definitely been some ups and downs with Image Comics, and we'll kind of get into that a little bit here. So I'm just going to go to my good friend Wikipedia and just kind of give you the lowdown according to Wikipedia. Image Comics is an American comic book publisher and is the third largest comic book and graphic novel publisher in the industry in both unit and market share. It was founded in 1992 by several high-profile illustrators as a venue for creator-owned properties, in which comic creators could publish material of their own creation without giving up the copyrights to those properties. and that's a big thing, even in today's day and age. Because, you know, back in the day, you know, like Jack Kirby famously, you know, created a lot of characters or co-created a lot of characters for the comic books industry. And he, you know, really didn't get as much of the monetary benefit as he should have, right? Because basically, you know, they're employees, right? And anything they create, you know, becomes property of the company. You know, and that's been an issue from comics, you know, for forever. You know, even Stan Lee, like I think at one point Stan Lee even sued Marvel because he wasn't getting, you know, money from all these, you know, billion-dollar movie franchises as much as he should have been, right? So it even carries on in today. But I mean, back in those days, like certain, you know, certain characters, you know, if you wanted to create something of your own and bring it into Marvel or DC, you know, it became theirs for them to do with as they pleased. You know, famously, Superman, you know, for DC Comics, you know, has literally made billions of dollars for that company. And the creators, you know, didn't even get a percentage of it, you know, like it's crazy. And these Image guys, Eric Larson, Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, Todd McFarlane, Willis Portaggio, Mark Silvestri, and Jim Valentino saw this and were like, you know what? We're gonna make our own stuff, not for you guys, and we're gonna, you know, sell it ourselves. And I think one of the turning points, from what I understand, was like when these artists came to Marvel, you know, and they were relaunching the X-Men, relaunching Spider-Man. They launched X-Force out of the New Mutants, you know, and they're making, you know, millions and millions of dollars for Marvel Comics, and they're selling their original art at auctions and all this other stuff, making all these T-shirts with their art on it. And these guys really weren't getting anything extra out of it, right? So they, you know, they said to themselves, hey, you know, like, let's go at our own. And I really admire that about them having done this. But like I said, like one of the issues with even today, like, this is still an issue of properties and all that. You like Marvel, especially in the last few years, has really been doing a lot of experimenting with established characters. You know, like having, you know, the Falcon take over the mantle of Captain America, having Natalie Portman, Jane Foster taking over the Thor mantle, you know, Miles Morales, you know, a person of color as Spider-Man. What else? There, you know, there's been all this stuff going on, and people are getting upset saying, you know, like, why don't they just make, you know, like, I don't mind having a black superhero. I don't mind having, you know, a Chinese Superman-like character. But what, you know, or a female Thor-like character, but why does it have to be a female Thor? Why, you know, like, why can't it be a new character? Well, it could be a new character, but the problem is anyone who creates it gets no money off it. You know, especially if you work for Marvel or DC. I know Rob Liefeld managed to get some deals with Marvel back in the day. Like, I know his character Cable, that he created for the New Mutants and later X-Force. I know there's some, he gets some sort of residuals from Cable and Deadpool as well. But those are very few and far between, those types of deals and those types of characters. You know, like, that's why, like, I mean, Marvel, you know, just using Marvel as an example, I mean, they have a huge catalog of characters to begin with, so you could reintroduce, you know, really rare, forgotten characters and, you know, make a modern spin on them. But as far as creating new characters for those companies, like, a lot of people ain't going to do that because, well, like, what's the point, you know? What if that character takes off and gets its own movie, and then Marvel, you know, and its parent company, Disney, is going to be making millions and billions off your idea, and you get next to nothing out of it, right?
And there's a lot in there, too, for the business of comics, which is just similar but different than any other media. And I mean, it's a long list of people that didn't get any money. Siegel and Schuster only got money when the Christopher Reeve Superman came out in, what, 77, 78? Mm-hmm. And, you know, finally people are doing interviews and all. Jack Kirby was doing comics for Topps Comics in the 90s until he died, not because he was like, oh, I just can't stop creating things, I just love penciling, but because he's like, I still got bills. Mm-hmm. You know? And you see Liefeld and Jim Lee and Todd McFarlane and all of them that worship Kirby and looked up to him and have done videos with Stan Lee, and, you know, they love comics. Say what you will about the guys in Image, and people did, but they genuinely loved comics.
Oh, yeah.
And they're seeing, hey, the previous generation made all these characters that we love and aren't getting a penny. So that's going to happen to us unless we change something. And yeah, like Liefeld gets paid every time there's a new Deadpool movie. Bill Pantola, maybe? I forget. Someone was saying that Guardians of the Galaxy, because Rocket Raccoon was in there, he got paid more money than he ever got for anything else in his life. But the movie industry and TV industry is different. They want those rights figured out right away. They pay residuals, too. Comics doesn't. And as comics are going more and more into entertainment, they got to figure it out. And a lot of it is, let's get ahead of this. You'll have actors make jokes. Oh, yeah, I was in that movie, you know, 30 years ago for 5 minutes, and every so often I get a residual check for a couple pennies. The fact that they still do that, if I go and buy, you know, random graphic novel at a comic store, that doesn't necessarily mean the original writer or artist get paid anything for it. Because now it's a reprint. You know, now it's old stuff. And especially with the Image Group coming along, they're seeing the marketing and the merchandise. And if everything Spider-Man on a screen is right now is because of Todd McFarlane. Every movement, every swing, every pose, the toys, the art, the movies, everything, that comes from Todd McFarlane. Because Spider-Man didn't move like that before him. And, you know, we didn't have the movies or anything when he left to form Image, but he's seeing, like, okay, there's a poster. That's my pose. I drew that. I didn't get paid anything for it. Here's, you know, the t-shirt. Here's the lunchbox. Here's this. Here's that. Here's all of this merchandise with Spider-Man on it. And it's not Ditko art, and it's not Romita art. It's my art. Because you know that's going to sell. And I'm not getting a cut. The only one I could say ever that could probably say I was told to do a job, I did a job, I got paid, and you're making money off them, just whatever, is that DC artist that created the style guide. I can't remember his name right now. But he made a style guide of all the characters, and that's the clip art kind of that they use for like Batman and Superman and everyone through the 70s and 80s. So you see an image of Garcia Lopez, maybe? I'm trying to remember his name. But you see an image, and it was like, yeah, because they weren't taking his images from a comic or a poster he made or whatever. They're taking the images that he got paid and said, hey, we need these images so we can sell the licenses. Here's your job. You did your job. You got paid for the job. And now we're going to use the art. That's different than, oh, hey, Todd, Spider-Man issue 8 has a cool pose on page 5. We're going to rip that off and put it on everything that we sell and not give you a penny. You know, I see it.
Well, and for years, you know, like forever, up until Image Comics, you know, the big comic book companies, you know, Marvel, DC, even like Archie and all them, I mean, it was all work for hire. Like, you were an employee, you did your job. And for some creators, they came in there and were like, well, you know, I got this creation, I really want this creation, you know, I want to do, you know, I have this idea for this character, okay, fine, you can do this character, but it's going to be our character afterwards. But anyway, go ahead, Kevin.
I was going to say, they're so insular with it too, but also well aware of the bigger world. In that, let's take modern day. Marvel and DC hate Bleeding Cool. And a lot of comic creators hate Bleeding Cool. How dare you tell what's going on in the industry? How dare you report rumors and projects we're working on and this secret and that secret? That's what the movie industry has had since its inception. There's always gossip sites and rumor sites, and here's what's going on. Sorry, comics are an entertainment industry. You're going to have to deal with a similar site. That's the way it is.
Yep.
And we're a family, and we're just... No, you're not. You're an entertainment company. This is what entertainment companies have to deal with. Someone's going to report your news, whether you like it or not. But then they're also worldly in that, like you're saying, why create a new character that you're going to own? And I get that. So that's why we have different takes on the character. Oh, it's still Spider-Man, but it's been different people. Oh, it's still Captain America, but it's been different people. But look at Marvel like, ah, geez, there's a Hulk show and they might introduce a girl Hulk. So let's beat them to a punch and do She-Hulk. Let's do Spider-Woman. Let's do Spider-Gwen. So the most recent one, because the rumor was Sony was like, hey, what if we did this? And Marvel's like, ah, we're going to do it first and so we can own it. It still happens to this day.
Yep.
If Marvel found out that someone's making, you know, Captain Canada tomorrow in a movie because of the Captain America movie, they're going to have Captain Canada in a digital-only comic by the end of the day first, you know?
Yep.
So what are you going to do as a writer or artist when they're ahead of the game to own everything?
Well, and there's just, like I said, you know, like, they get treated, they weren't treated very well, you know, and for these Image guys, you know, had Marvel maybe been a little bit more generous with them, more willing to, you know, hey, if you want, you know, want to do, I think it was Rob Liefeld, let me think here. Was it Rob Liefeld? Or no, I'll use Todd McFarlane as an example. He had the Spawn character idea for years, right? But he wasn't going to bring it to Marvel because he knew that this could be a hit, and if he gave it to Marvel, he would get screwed out of it. You know, if they had made a deal with him, like, well, you can retain the rights, but we get to publish it, you know, maybe they would have stayed. Maybe we wouldn't have had Image Comics. But because they were set in their, you know, in their ways and weren't able to evolve as a company, you know, they lost out. Like, they really, like, Marvel literally lost out on probably billions of dollars at this point. When you consider everything that McFarlane's done, everything that Image has done after Marvel. But yeah, so I mean that was the culture, and it still is. It's still a culture to this day. But it was, even back then, it was more, you know, like, keep your mouth shut and collect your paycheck. Just be happy you got a job, type of thing, right? Like, that old school mentality was, you know, very much, you know, in the forefront. Hence why these guys decided to strike out on their own and leave Marvel. So anyway, I'm going to continue on. Normally, this was a case in the work-for-hire dominated American comics industry in which the legal author is a publisher, such as Marvel or DC Comics, and the creator is an employee of that publisher. Its output was originally dominated by superhero and fantasy series from the... And this is, again, talking about Image Comics. Originally, it was dominated by superhero and fantasy series from the studios of the founding Image partners, but now includes comics in many genres and independent creators. Its best-known publications include The Walking Dead, Spawn, Saga, and Kick-Ass. All right, well, let's go to the founding of Image Comics. So like we said, in the early 90s, you had some of these comic book creators like Eric Larson, Rob Liefeld, Jim Valentino, originally wining and dining with Malibu Comics, which was an up-and-coming comic book company, to get some creator-owned comics going through them. Plus, like, back in those days, Malibu Comics was... It was a nice-looking comic book company. Like, they had, like, the nice paper, the nice coloring, and, you know, it definitely would have been a good fit for their type of art, that's for sure. And then eventually they did make a deal with Malibu Comics, and they got more comic creators on board. They, you know, they met with Jim Lee and got Mark Silvestri on board and got the rest of them, and... from what I understand, according to the documentary that we both watched, the Image Revolution, which is a 2014 documentary. It's an hour and 21 minutes. It's available for free on Tubi if you want to watch it. And also, a few years ago, I watched Robert Kirkman's Secret History of Comics. It was an AMC series back in 2017, and they did an episode on Image Comics. And, they all banded together and left the company. And, you know, they met with Tom DeFalco and Terry Stewart over at Marvel, because Tom DeFalco was the editor-in-chief and Terry Stewart was the president. And they basically told them, like, yeah, we're leaving. And they, you know, they tried to talk them down, and nope, they're leaving. And I think they probably thought they were bluffing, but they weren't. And they even, I think, went over to DC Comics and had a meeting with them to basically tell them, like, they're forming their own comic book company and they're not coming to DC Comics. So then they made their deal with Malibu. But instead of marketing their books under the Malibu banner, they were going to have their own banner, which and company, which they called Image Comics, and I believe it was Rob Liefeld actually came up with the Image logo. And then they left Marvel, and yeah, so like we mentioned, it was Todd McFarlane, and he was known for his Spider-Man work. Jim Lee was known for his X-Men work. Rob Liefeld was known for X-Force and New Mutants. Mark Silvestri was known for his work on Wolverine. Eric Larson was on The Amazing Spider-Man, and Jim Valentino was on Guardians of the Galaxy. And Willis Portaggio had done X-Men work. And they all left and formed Image Comics with their own studios as well, that were part of that. So, Kevin, your favorite titles back in the day, like back
when they first the original watched. Seven.
Yeah. What were you loving the most?
Wow. I mean, I bought them all. It's a sad thing. Well, not. It took a while before Wetworks came out, finally. Willis Portaggio went through, I think it's Housebrenner, or like it just sounded like he had one bad thing after another, and it just never ended up happening. So he kind of stepped away from Image. I think he released Wetworks at one point, maybe an issue or two. There were toys made before the comic was even out. Wizard had a cover and everything. So I think we can eliminate that. Like I bought them, but looking back, like Wildcats never resonated with me at all. I bought way too much Youngblood, but then I was just rereading stuff. I'm like, I forgot these people's names. I got, you know, 20, 30 issues and spinoffs and random things in my long boxes, at least, if not more. And I couldn't tell you the names. Like, that's ridiculous. If I read that much, I should be able to. Shadowhawk was very cool. It was interesting. It was cool. But once you knew the gimmick, it kind of didn't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, didn't go really anywhere. Cyberforce, just another team one. Like, it didn't really, you know. I think one of the problems is you got four of them, with Portaggio doing teams all at once. Like, that's a lot of characters to introduce.
Yep.
And to do character development, make you care. Which is probably why I think Spawn was great, and I love Savage Dragon, because Savage Dragon just felt like anything can happen. It's the most comic book of all the Image comics.
Yes.
He was just like, here's a big dude, and he's green and has a fin. And if I want him to have a random power, I can do it. And if I want a random bad guy, I can do it. And if I want to kill them, I can bring them back and do this crazy thing, that crazy thing. He just went all out. Like, Eric Larson was dumping all of his toys on the floor and being like, let's make an adventure. And you could sense it coming through. And I think that's why it's one of the you know, it's what, only two, I think, that continue to this day. Because he was having fun with it. And Spawn just, you get the McFarlane art. He changed how capes and chains are drawn in comics forever, much like he changed how Spider-Man was drawn in comics. Great idea, cool concept, bringing in, you know, all these new characters like Violator, Clown, Angela for a while he could, you know, like he creating a real heaven and hell mythical world and doing great at it.
Yeah, for me, I would say I did like Wildcats just because Jim Lee, like Jim Lee's my favorite artist, and the stories kind of sucked. Claremont came and did an arc or two, which I thought was kind of cool. But it was really when Alan Moore came in, like the mid 90s, to take over Wildcats when it got really good. I think, you know, some of the Image stuff, like some of the problems that they had were, you know, their lateness, you know, certain creators, like you mentioned, you know, took forever to get their product out. Even Wildcats, I know there was a lot of delays there. So that was a problem. But I think another problem was the writing. You know, like, so, you know, like, just because you can draw a beautiful book doesn't make you a good writer. And I know it was early days, like, you know, for some of them, they, you know, they're learning how to write and so on and so forth, and they got better at it as time went on. But I really think when, you know, it started to shine for Image Comics is when they would actually bring writers in and actually, you know, work together on the book, like in the writing and the drawing. And like I said, I think, you know, guys, you know, like Chris Claremont going over, doing some issues, Alan Moore and so on, it really definitely helped with Image Comics.
Youngblood, for example, you have a great idea, a government bought and sold and marketed superhero team. And they have toys and action figures, and they're celebrities, and they do interviews, and they walk the red carpet, and they'll cover up any mistakes that they made and all. And just, like, this publicity, government publicity machine behind a superhero team. I'm like, well, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But then you read them, I'm like, this is not good.
Yeah.
It's pretty, but it's not good at all. And I guess years later, and I didn't realize it till recently, but at one point, Rob Liefeld went back and looked at the original Youngblood and said, you know, the art's still good, but I wish we had better writing. And he did a remastered, rewritten one.
Okay.
And apparently, it's really good. It's like, oh, if this had come out, I may have stuck with the title.
Mm-hmm.
I may have been more interested. But, I mean, by then, you know, the damage is done, and Youngblood is just such a weird brand right now anyways for many reasons.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I would say, yeah, early days they really did suffer from writing and so on and so forth, and because they didn't have, you know, necessarily like they didn't have the comic book structure that they had over at Marvel, right? You know, where they have the editors and they got, groups you had to answer to and so on and so forth. When they were their own bosses, they kind of, I think, took it for granted, right? And you know, the product kind of suffered, and production numbers kind of suffered, unfortunately. So there were two key provisions when they organized Image Comics. Image would not own any creator's work. The creator would, which was, you know, of course, like we were talking before, a big selling point. Image itself would own no intellectual property except for the company's trademarks, its name, and its logo. And no Image partner would interfere creatively or financially with any other partner's work. And this would come to play a little bit later down the line, some animosity in the group. Each Image partner founded his own studio, which published under the Image banner, but was autonomous from any central editorial control. Portacio withdrew during the formative stages to deal with his sister's illness, so Image originally consisted of six studios. Todd McFarlane Productions, which was owned by Todd McFarlane. Wildstorm Productions, owned by Jim Lee. Highbrow Entertainment, owned by Eric Larson. Shadowline, owned by Jim Valentino. Top Cow Productions, owned by Mark Silvestri. And Extreme Studios, owned by Rob Liefeld. And as we mentioned, the founders' initial titles were produced under the Image imprint, but published through Malibu Comics, which provided administrative production, distribution, and marketing support for the launch of them. The first Image comics to arrive in stores were Liefeld's Youngblood, Larson's Savage Dragon, McFarlane's Spawn, and Lee's Wildcats. And Youngblood and Savage Dragon were not entirely new creations, having debuted in Gary Carlson's Megaton, an independent comic book title published from 1981 to 1987. They basically became like the Beatles of the comic book community. They would have launch parties for these books. They would go to comic book stores and do signings. You'd have people lined up around the corner to meet these guys. Rob Liefeld was featured in Levi's Jeans commercial. I believe it was directed by Spike Lee, if I remember correctly. And they were kind of like all over the place. They were definitely like rock stars. And then later books included such titles as Cyber Force, Shadowhawk, Wetworks, which Kevin had mentioned. The Max, later on, Sam Keith's book. Dale Keown, another Marvel artist, did The Pit. Jay Lee did Hellshock. And eventually, Kurt Busiek, Brent Anderson, and Alex Ross would do Astro City. It was definitely a great time, and they paid a lot of homage to Jack Kirby. They really loved Jack Kirby, and I know one of the original ideas that was floated around for Image Comics was how Marvel, on the first page of their books, they would always have Stan Lee Presents, whatever title it is, right? An idea they were floating around for Image Comics in the early days was to have Jack Kirby Presents. But unfortunately, I don't think they ever did anything like that. But I know they did meet with Jack Kirby, and I think he did some work for Image too. Did he not, Kevin?
I mean, I remember he had his line at Tops. And there was that 1963 comic, but it wasn't Kirby doing it. It was certainly inspired by him.
Yeah.
But he wasn't working on it. I cannot remember any Jack Kirby title collection.
I mean,
it would shock me to find out, like, Eric Larson had him, like, ink something, you know?
Yeah, I don't think it was, like, an original title or anything, but I think he did do some artwork for something that they did. I can't remember now. And unfortunately, I can't find any information. Some of the other titles included Gen 13, Witchblade, The Darkness, and so on and so forth. Like, definitely some top-tier books, some top-tier talent, and it was good times. But as I had mentioned before, unfortunately, these guys, I think the fame kind of...
Phantom Force. Phantom Force was Kirby. Sorry. Yep, okay. He did have an Image one.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, I figured, there was something like that. And, I mean, Image also introduced some other top talent, like Michael Turner, I believe got a start at Image. Humberto Ramos, or Humberto Ramos, sorry, got us started in Image, J. Scott Campbell, and so forth. It was good times. Like, the art was amazing, but as we had mentioned, or as I had mentioned, as you know, they were getting more popular, they're getting more appearances, making a lot of money. Their work kind of suffered a little bit, and there was a lot of delays. I know there was a lot of anger from a lot of comic book stores. You know, they'd put in their orders for books, and the books wouldn't show up. They'd be delayed. And eventually there was, you know, some animosity amongst the different comic book creators. Like, I know Todd McFarlane, as far as I know, Todd McFarlane had very few delays, and he was very professional in that way, and he expected the other guys to be that way and got upset with him because they weren't.
There was one around 17, 18, 19, 20 of Spawn, somewhere around there, where two issues shipped ahead of time, like 19 and 20 shipped, but 17 and 18 weren't out yet.
Okay.
And it turned out to be that, I guess the reason was they were switching printers, and something got screwed up along the way. So the ones that were supposed to come out hadn't been printed yet because of the dispute with leaving printer, but the ones that were sent to the new one had. And it eventually got, you know, fixed like a month or two later. It was just kind of weird, like, did I miss an issue? What's happening here?
Mm-hmm.
I think Eric Larson may have had like a month where, you know, he was a little off, but he was consistent. Jim Lee finished Wildcats, left when he was ready, did a couple other things here and there. You know, I remember Divine Right, I think, was a comic he tried for a little while.
Yep.
That nothing came of. Cyberforce seemed to come out, was done, and then Silvestri moved on to Witchblade, which became a phenomenon, and that's where Michael Turner comes in too. Before he left and did his own creator thing with Aspen. Eric Larson, pretty consistent. Liefeld seems like he needs an editor to focus him. And he didn't have that with doing his own Extreme Studios mm-hmm. through Image. Because in the first year, he had Youngblood. Youngblood's out, and he goes, you know what, there was a team before Youngblood, and I want to tell their story, and that's Brigade. You know what? I have the Superman idea. Here's Supreme. It's like, dude, you have three comics, and your company's not even a year old.
Mm-hmm.
You're not putting this out. And then, hey, I have this idea. And it's so crazy now because people forget it. He goes, I'm going to take all my comics and release issue 25 now. And it's going to show you where we're going to be by issue 25. And then you'll be excited to see how we get there.
Mm-hmm.
Which was interesting and crazy and didn't line up either. Oh, but he seemed like just ADHD, excited, can't control himself, is like, I have an idea, let me do it. Okay, but Rob, your other idea is not finished yet. Yep, I have this idea. Like, he seems the type, if you went to his house, there's a lot of half-done projects.
Not,
you know, like, one day he decided he's going to, like, paint the garage, and, like, only one side of it's painted.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but it wasn't just his artwork and stuff, it was his company. And the fact that he was, like, hiring all these people, like, I know this one story that I seen on Sci-Fi Buzz. I can't remember who they were interviewing. It was one of the editors for Extreme. And, he was in line. He was taking his nephew to meet Rob Liefeld at a comic book convention or something. And the guy in front of him I was an artist. I'm not sure who he is, but he brought his, like, portfolio up to the table and showed Rob, and Rob, you know, he's like, oh, you know, it was all Rob's stuff, right? Like, that, you know, it was all his characters, and he's just blown away. He's like, this is great. You know what? You're hired. Get back here, you know? And the guy literally walked around the table and got behind Rob Liefeld, and he was an employee now. And so the guy coming up, he's like, well, I can't draw, but I can write. And apparently, according to him, he never wrote anything in his life, but Rob hired him too. He was like, yeah, get back here.
Yeah.
And then he became an editor. But that was just the way he was. You know, like, very enthusiastic, and I really... A lot of people hate on him, but I think he really does have the best intentions. He's just... He's got that, you know, that squirrel mentality, you know? Like, not a squirrel, but, you know, when a person is squirreled, you know?
Right. He's passionate, and it gets in the way of clear, rational thought.
Yeah.
A quote, normal person would say, okay, I want to do this. Here's my end goal. Let me figure out my A to Z to get to that end goal. Whereas Rob's like, screw it, I'm going to just do it. Mm-hmm. And he'll worry about the consequences and the how-to later. And there's something admirable about that. And plus, he's not doing it because he's like, I want to make a lot of money. He did. But that wasn't the goal. It's like, I like comics. Comics are cool. Do you think they're cool, too? Come on, let's go make comics.
Yep.
Like, he's just this hyped-up child.
Yep, exactly.
And there's something noble and lovable about that. I've completely... Because it's funny how... Things we liked when we were younger, there's this period where we all have to think they're garbage and trash, and then we come around to it again later. And I'm completely background on Liefeld. I'm like, I'm willing to bet there's stuff he did in his life. He's like, geez, I wouldn't have done that again. Or, oh, that was stupid. Or, oh, I made a mistake there. But he takes it as, but I learned something. And the next crazy idea I have will be a little less crazy because I've learned something here.
Mm-hmm.
And he still just loves making comics. Like, even when he shoots his mouth off, he did that a year or so ago. Like, DC sucks, they're losing money, Batman's the only thing they got going. He's not doing it because he hates DC. He's doing it because he loves DC and wants to see them stick around. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's not doing it in the best way.
No.
But like you said, his intentions are always good.
Yeah. He just has a way of rubbing people the wrong way sometimes. So, yeah, So this, you know, they started in 92 and we're going forward. So I think it was 96 when Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld were approached by Marvel to do The Heroes Reborn, where Liefeld would be in charge of Captain America and the Avengers titles, and Jim Lee would be in charge of Iron Man and the Fantastic Four. And that they would basically be relaunching them and redesigning them and basically making, you know, new origins for these characters based on the old origins. And they would, you know, this would all take place in a pocket universe and all this other stuff. It was okay. You know, like Jim Lee, you know, as much as I love Jim Lee, you know, and his art is amazing... He's not a consistent artist, you know, like, and I mean, I can understand that, you know, like his detailing is so meticulous, you know, like I'd imagine, you know, doing a page would take forever for him, because there's so much detail that he puts into it. So, you know, he was doing the Fantastic Four, and I want to say he did like the first five issues. And then he dropped off, and then he would do a page here, a page there, and you know, that, I mean, that's just the way he operates, right? Like, I mean, that's the way he was in X-Men. You could maybe get six consecutive issues out of the guy, and then he'd drop off for two or three months. Then he'd come back. And so that happened again with Heroes Reborn, because he was doing the Fantastic Four. I can't remember who was doing Iron Man. Was it Portaggio?
Maybe. I wasn't out of comics, but I wasn't as in.
Yeah, I want to say that was him. And then Liefeld, you know, he was only doing like a few pages here, a few pages there. He famously redesigned Captain America in a not-so-flattering way. One thing Rob Liefeld has, he has a hard time with anatomy. Like, his characters, like, his humans don't conform to normal human proportions.
Won't let anatomy get in the way of a good pose.
Yeah, like, he can do a pose, but he cannot, like, he cannot draw a side profile to save his life. and he has a real hard time drawing feet on characters. And he loves his pouches. Absolutely loves having lots of pouches and lots of big guns.
Have you ever seen his pouch drawing?
The like where it's like just a pouch person?
Yes.
Yeah. I just seen that fantastic. Yesterday. Yeah. I seen that. Someone posted that on social media. I seen that. But yeah, like, and of course, there was some issues with Rob and Marvel, like, you know, like, I, like, because they were in the West Coast back then. Marvel was still in, well, I think Marvel's still in New York, actually.
Marvel's still in New York.
Okay. Yeah, it was DC that moved west. Okay. Yep. And so Rob would send somebody with his pages on a digital CD or something, and it was basically like a hostage exchange. Like he would hand over the DVD ROM or whatever to the Marvel or to the DC guy, and the DC guy would hand Rob's check to that guy, and he would fly back and give it to Rob, and eventually he was kicked off the project. Like he was only in charge of the Avengers and Captain America, I want to say, for like the first five or six issues. And then those titles defaulted to Jim Lee's control. And then once...
Because of both of them, didn't they get so far behind that the characters were back in the regular Marvel Universe before this Heroes Reborn series was over?
I don't think it was quite that bad. If memory serves, I'm just going by what I remember. Jim Lee, everything defaulted back to Jim Lee and Wildstorm, and then he kind of finished it out. Like, and they only did it on a trial basis. There was only 12 issues. Jim Lee talked them into doing a 13th issue for all the titles, where he actually had, I think, like a lot of his Wildstorm characters come in for an issue. They did like a 4-issue crossover between them all, and like Wildcats was part of it, I think, and other characters. And then shortly thereafter, that's when Marvel relaunched with Heroes Reborn, with Peter David writing, and I can't quite remember the artist. I want to say it was Humberto Ramos, but I could be wrong. But anyway, so yeah, they went back, and then I think it was not long after that when Rob Liefeld was officially kicked out of Image Comics, because he'd kind of started his own thing called Maximum Press, his own imprint comic book company, and I think he was starting to move a lot of his characters and stuff over to Maximum Press, and then Rob, because he was doing his own publishing company, he wasn't conforming to the rules that they established, you know, in the original partnership. Let's see here. No Image partner would interfere creatively or financially with any other partner's work. And he was starting to do that because...
he was poaching talent, right?
He was poaching talent for Maximum Press, which he wasn't breaking, because Maximum Press was its own publishing company, so he wasn't screwing over the Image deal, but he was, because he had his own company at that point. So then they held a vote, and they were going to kick him out of the company, but then he got wind of it, apparently, and resigned, and that was September 1996.
I mean, by then, like, his brain was kind of already tainted. We had had, you know, all the series start and stop. We had had different, you know, let's attempt this, let's try this, let's do that. Random characters that show up for 1-2 issues, you know, for a series. Really went with Maximum Press and started going after the bad girl art style that was getting popular at the time, too. But he didn't give you any reason to stick around. Like when they said Rob Liefeld's leaving Image, I'm like, okay, I don't care about Liefeld's work anymore at this point because it's not consistent. He's not staying out there giving me stuff, you know, month after month. And, you know, I don't want to say like I'm expecting that, you know, Rob Liefeld, Jim Lee, and everyone sit down at their desk and draw every day for my entertainment. No. But he's got a whole studio, and between the whole studio, he can't get a single book to come up consistently to hit double digits.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just, that's basic comics.
Yep. So, again, I got a little something here from Wikipedia. The founders of Image were best known for their dynamic and extravagant art and for character-driven, thinly plotted stories in the superhero genre. Although the company also published similar works, many readers came to perceive this as the Image style of comics. Valentino had become less active as a creator of the after the company's first few years and responded to this development in 1997 by using his position as a partner to seek out and publish a number of titles by other creators in distinctively different genres and styles. In a deliberate attempt to diversify Image's output and how it was perceived, although most of these stories ironically dubbed the non-line because of their lack of commonality, did not sell and were soon canceled. They introduced an increasingly important business model for the company, offering other creators the same total ownership terms the partners enjoyed, and taking a fixed fee upon publication for the company's administrative costs. This practice was later formalized as a function of Image Central, a business unit independent of any of the studios. This focus of non-studio comics increased when Valentino took on the role of Image's publisher, assuming many of the responsibilities held by Martyr, I guess the previous guy, until he left the company in 1999. So, again, some of the business stuff here. The company's position in North America direct market diminished in the 2000s, challenged by Dark Horse Comics and IDW Publishing for the position of third largest publisher after Marvel and DC. In February 2004, Eric Larson replaced Valentino as publisher, largely continuing existing business practices. Larson stepped down as publisher in July 2008, and executive director Eric Stevenson was promoted to the position. Valentino returned to operating his own studio after his Shadowline imprint. Shortly after Stevenson's appointment, Image added Robert Kirkman as the company's first new partner since its founding. So that's a pretty awesome distinction, because I know Robert Kirkman was a fan of Image Comics. In particular, he's a huge fan of Eric Larson's. And here he is living the dream that most of us comic book fans have, and he actually became a partner. And he's not an artist. He's a writer. Like, that's also an awesome distinction between them. So before we get into talking about Robert Kirkman, let's go back a little bit and talk about Jim Lee. Because aside from Rob Liefeld, Jim Lee also left Image Comics. He left on his own terms. He and his Wildstorm Studios left Image Comics and were sold to DC Comics, which was a pretty big thing at the time, because, you know, one of the reasons, you know, like, they founded Image Comics was because they were trying to get away from, you know, the big two. You know, they wanted to do it their own. But I guess DC must have made Jim Lee an offer he couldn't refuse, and he sold Wildstorm to DC. So Wildstorm got integrated into DC Comics. You know, there were some crossovers over the years. Eventually, you know, with the launch of the New 52, some of his Wildstorm characters actually got placed into the main DC continuity. They brought back Stormwatch. They brought back the character Grifter and the character Voodoo from the Wild Storm or Wildcats, I mean, and they became part of Disney continuity. As far as I know, they're still part of Disney continuity, but we just haven't seen them for a while.
Yeah, they're on a shelf.
Grifter, I don't understand. Grifter is an excellent idea for a character that could work in the DC universe if someone just had the right writer for him. I think he would do really well. And I know they've since relaunched Wildcats again, I believe, but now it's kind of like its own continuity. It's outside of DC, but I think they're doing, like, oh, is it Wildcats I'm thinking of? Where
we Stormwatch, they did.
Well, I know they did
a few different versions of.
But just recently, I want to say they did another version of Wildcats. But in this version, there's DC different versions of established DC characters in it as well. Like Barry Allen's like a cop in it or something. Like I haven't actually read it myself.
No, but you're right. They did like an Elseworlds kind of thing.
Yes, yes.
And there's, yeah, because Jim Lee's Wildstorm stuff was integrated with New 52. Voodoo had a title, Stormwatch was mm-hmm. title, Grifters around. Like, there's a lot. And then once Rebirth happened, they went away again. And, like, they've popped up here and there, but for the most part, they're gone on the shelf. And then 5G or whatever was supposed to start, but Dan Didio got fired. Corona happened, putting all of DC, you know, all of comics in pause, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
So Jim Lee kind of hasn't been fully in charge long enough to do something with the characters either. Like, yeah. I'd be shocked if, you know, he doesn't bring them back out again. Because why not? I mean, DC bought out the, you know, Captain Marvel and the Fawcett characters and the Charlton characters later on, so they have a history of integrating characters from other companies into their company. It can mm-hmm. happen again. And when the guy that created them is the guy in charge of the company and how to, why not? I think you'd have to strip a lot of them down. Like, I don't know how you do Wildcats of this ancient battle between two alien races that's been taking place off to the side of DC all along, but somehow Superman and Batman, you know, aren't aware of it.
Well,
you got to, you know, do some rewriting.
Well, in the New 52, they were actually writing the Daemonites, which are the bad guys in the Wildcats book, as being like an enemy of the Kryptonians.
Okay.
They were actually writing that into the Superman title, like not Action Comics. It was just the Superman.
Yeah.
It was after George Perez left, because he relaunched the Superman title for the New 52. It was after he left. I can't remember who was writing it, but yeah, like they were basically writing like the Daemonites are like an ancient enemy of the Kryptonians, and what's the name of the head Daemonite? Is it Hellstorm? Is that his name?
Hellspont?
And they yeah. actually did a few issues where he's fighting Superman, which was kind of neat. I was like, huh. You know, like, it kind of makes sense that they would do something like that, you know, rewrite the Daemonites into the Kryptonian, you know, mythology. But then, yeah, now they're kind of forgotten, and it's never been mentioned of since.
Maybe they're hanging out with Ultraverse.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, there's... Oh, man, that's another thing. Like, Marvel, come on, do something with these characters. Yeah, instead of, like, focusing on Watchmen, like you know, don't get me wrong, I love the Watchmen, but I really don't need Wally West to be the next Dr. Manhattan, because that apparently is a thing.
Heroes in Crisis? Yeah.
Yeah, like... We don't need that. Like, there's other so many characters you guys could be playing with. You don't need to do that. But anyway, I digress. So yeah, Jim Lee went to DC, and now, yeah, like, now he's the publisher? Is that what
he is? Didio's gone. He's head publisher now.
Yeah, because he was co-publisher, but now with Dan Didio gone, yeah. So anyway. Continuing back with Image Comics, Robert Kirkman became a partner, you know, and he's it, honestly my favorite comic book of the 2000s and the 2010s was Invincible, which was Robert Kirkman's creation. I love that book. 144 issues, I believe it went. It was fantastic. And Kirkman has his own imprint, which is called Skybound. And then, with Kirkman acting as publisher after Stevenson, they started really launching a lot of awesome books, including Chew, Morning Glories, Fatal, The Manhattan Projects, and Saga. And there's a lot of other Image titles out there as well, which are fantastic, I think. What was I going to say here? Obviously The Walking Dead is, you know, not only the biggest title to come out of Image Comics, but, you know, one of the biggest titles to come out of any comic book company, like The Walking Dead. I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't watch The Walking Dead anymore, but for quite a few years, like, I mean, it was the top show on the planet besides Game of Thrones. And it's a Image book. It's a Kirkman creation. One of the funny things about The Walking Dead, which I think they mentioned on the documentary, they definitely mentioned it on Kirkman's show. When he proposed The Walking Dead, he wanted to do this black and white zombie comic book because he's a big fan of zombie movies. And he said, like, I always wonder, like, when that movie's over, like, what happens to the characters? Like, what happens in that world? Like, what goes on? So he's like, I would want to read a comic book like that, where it's just, like, each issue is, like, a day in the life of this apocalypse. You know, what would characters be doing? You know, if there's no police, if there's no army, what would people be doing? You know? and he originally proposed it, and I think it was Valentino, was the publisher at the time, and he said no. He's like, this sounds terrible. There's no hook, there's no way we're going to do this. And so Kirkman said, well, what do I got to do? And he told him, well, you got to have a hook. There's got to be something to hook the readers into coming back every week, or every month, sorry. And then he's like, okay, well, it's aliens. And then he's like, well, what do you mean by that? He's like, this apocalypse is, you know, like, the zombies are here because aliens, you know, sent a virus to Earth because they want humans to kill each other. And then once all the humans are dead, then they'll invade. That's the hook. And he's like, okay, that sounds cool. You know, do it. And, and he also said, well, I'll leave Easter eggs, I'll leave hints, and, you know, and we'll build up to this reveal. And then, okay, so they agreed to it, and then he started doing the book and everything. And then it was, I don't know, like 6 or 7 issues in, and then they're noticing there's no Easter eggs, there's no hinting at what's going on. So they approached Kirkman and said, like, okay, when are you going to introduce, you know, the aliens? And he's like, yeah, about that, there's no aliens. and they're like, oh. He's like, yeah, I just said that because that was the only way you'd agree to do the book. And I knew it was going to be good, so I knew you wouldn't care that that's not going to happen. And they were like, oh, okay. And yeah, it ran for 193 issues, and there's 2 TV shows, and I think there's a miniseries coming out.
Yep, plus books and merchandise, and he doesn't have to do anything ever again in life if he doesn't want to.
And he really is the best comic book story. Like, everyone, when they think of, like, comic book Cinderella stories, they think of Stan Lee, right? Well, look at Stan Lee, you know, he co-created these, I'm not undermining Stan Lee, I love Stan Lee, but, you know, he co-created these books, he went to Hollywood, he sold, you know, now Marvel's making these movies, and he was doing all these cameos, you know, everyone knows who he is, like it's the Cinderella story, but it's like, Robert Kirkman's story is a lot, in my opinion, a lot more interesting. Because Stan Lee, he got his foot in the door because his mom was cousins with Martin Goodman, who was the publisher of Timely Comics, right? So she just asked her cousin's husband, hey, could you give my son a job? Like, he got laid off from the Girdle factory and you know, he wants to be a writer. Can you get him a job and get him writing something? And that's what happened. And then Stan, you know, the rest is history. But Stan Lee's mom got his foot in the door for him, right? Whereas Robert Kirkman, he was just a fan who kept, you know, writing Eric Larson, you know, oh, I've got ideas, I got this, I got that. And there was one convention he attended and as a fan, and he didn't even live in that city. And I guess he'd seen Eric Larson outside the convention center, and he's like, well, I'm, you know, waiting for a cab, I got to go to the airport. And he's like, well, I can drive you. And then, so I guess Eric Larson got into his car, and they got, like Eric Larson almost missed his flight because Robert Kirkman didn't know how to get to the airport because he didn't actually live there. and he was so busy, like, talking to him, trying to, you know, get his foot in the door. And then finally Eric Larson relented and was like, okay, you know, because Robert Kirkman, I should mention, is a huge Savage Dragon fan. So he got, Robert Kirkman was doing a book called Battle Pope, which got published from Image Comics, and then eventually he got Invincible, and then eventually he got Walking Dead. And Invincible, like the early issues, there's a few crossovers with Savage Dragon, like, and I think Kirkman even wrote an issue or co-wrote a couple issues of Savage Dragon. But, you know, and then, you know, his books became popular. You know, obviously The Walking Dead, you know, probably the most popular book to come out of Image Comics. And now the guy's, you know, he was the publisher of Image Comics for several years. I think he has since stepped down. But, I mean, he's got his own, you know, Hollywood production companies. He's done a number of books. In my mind, he's you know, the biggest comic book success story because he was just a fan. He was just a regular dude. And not only that, but he was a regular dude that was, you know, having a hard time. Like, you know, like up until he, you know, got his break at Image, like he was having to, like, remortgage his house. He was having, you know, making a hard time making ends meet, trying to support his family. And now, you know, he's a multimillionaire. He's you know, a celebrity. He's, like, you know, a modern comic book success story. And in my opinion, the greatest comic book success story, because he was a fan first. And he grew up, like, Image Comics was, like, his bread and butter. He loved Image Comics. Like, that was, he was kind of like you, Kevin. Like, he got them all. Like, you know, when he went to his comic book store and he's like, I want Image Comics. And they're like, okay, which Image Comics? And he said, all the Image Comics. I want them all. Make sure they're always in my box, because I will buy them. I want them. And then he becomes, you know, a creator, and then he becomes a publisher of that company. And one of the founders now. Or, sorry, one of the partners, who wasn't one of the founders. Like, it's an amazing story.
I would say you don't... Robert Kirkman would have loved comics no matter what. He wouldn't have saw it out as a career without Image.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is the... Oh, these guys can do it. These guys are taking a risk. There is a way to do it by yourself. There is a way to do it without the machine mm-hmm. that's Marvel and DC. And while people can look at, you know, I mean, I remember finally looking at having All Image on my pull list and going, this is ridiculous. Not a chance in hell. Some of these I'm just not enjoying at all. But I think, you know, you have your original group, which were artists first, that said, what else can we do? If anything, I think your Image round two, Sam Keith with the Max, which is marketed as a superhero book, but is not, is about much deeper themes and ideas, and he's writing it, and he's just exploring so many things, people start going, wait, this isn't an Image comic? Someone like Robert Kirkman probably reading Image going, okay, so we can do this too? And as much as Valentino went around saying, okay, let's pick up other things, other ideas here, let's broaden what Image can be, you had people like Robert Kirkman going, okay, so it's not just here my art looks pretty on superhero books, it's anything that we want it to be. It's anything to just keep the rights for it. And look how many characters like came and went through Image just to get a couple issues out because the Image eye would sell it. You know, Bone was published by Image for a little while because it got it more notice. You know, and there's plenty of other characters that came and went for a little bit, you know, just did a couple issues with that Image eye and then back to their, you know, their own independent company. Well, now you got fans that wouldn't have picked up that book without the Image on it, and now are following you. Your back section of previews exists because of Image now. Yes, there were always non-Marvel and DC publishers, of course, and like Valiant was already going before Image stepped up, you know, out there. Dark Horse was already going, but a lot of those companies are, hey, I can take this risk too, and I can try it too, and that's what Kirkman ended up doing. But he wanted to do Image. He self-published stuff. He did everything he could to just try to get out there and get noticed and get into comics, but he wanted Image. He didn't want Marvel. He didn't want DC. I wrote something earlier today on my own site about Wizard magazine, but if Forrest J. Ackerman took Famous Monsters and created a generation of monster kids, Garib Sheamus took Wizard and created a generation of Image kids. And that's what Robert Kirkman and me and you and all had. Like, Wizard was our Famous Monsters. That was our influence for a generation. And we look at Walking Dead, which is kind of Monsters and Image together. But, you know, stuff like Saga, like you're saying, I just read Manifest Destiny first volume, which is incredible. Was such a good book. And now Image is, geez, I didn't mean to put it this way, but it's the current house of ideas, like what Marvel was. Hey, are you a good writer and you got a good artist you're paired up with and you have a story that only the two of you can tell and there's nothing else like it on the stands today and it's an original property? You go to Image.
Yeah, they're still putting out like really great stuff. Like for yourself, Kevin, what are you reading from Image right now?
I gotta get caught up on Saga, finally. I'm taking this break to finally read it. Manifest Destiny is a retelling of the Lewis and Clark expedition with supernatural elements. And it was fascinating. I'm reading through, I was like, okay, I know the story, Lewis and Clark, Sacagawea, Louisiana Purchase, all that. And then I flip the page, I'm like, what the hell is this? What have they added to the story? I was just dumbfounded by it. Savage Dragon is still great. At some point, like, everyone's raving about Sex Criminals. I just kind of don't want to, you know, leave it. I want to read it, but not leave it laying around in the house.
Yeah, you definitely can.
So I got to figure out a way to do that one.
Even Saga, like some of their stuff.
It depends. Yep. Yeah. depends on the issue.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, the only thing I'll say for Image and why a lot of it's not on my pull list is they're absolutely right for the graphic novel.
Yes.
It is definitely better to sit down and read most of these in a chunk. And I don't like to. I realized that, you know, the single issues are the lost leader that fuel something being popular enough to warrant a graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
But the Image books especially, I like to sit down and read the whole thing. Like that. And what's, I mean, granted, we're all shut down now, but libraries love graphic novels now. Like, mine has about two long rows of nothing but graphic novels, and then a separate section that's all manga, which is a whole, you know, other thing, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, when we were kids, when Image first came out, like, there was no way to get any of that. I have a graphic novel of the original run of Savage Dragon, original run of Shadowhawk, but that was bought through the comic shop. That was not bought through, you know, Barnes & Noble or Borders or anything like that, or the library. And I think Walking Dead's probably what really changed that. Walking Dead was sold at Walmart and Target because it got so popular, people wanted to read that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, what's the company that makes these? Image? Do you have more? You do? We would like to buy more from you because these are popular.
Yeah, it's definitely a great time to be an Image fan. Like for myself, like I mentioned, The Walking Dead just ended last year, and it was one of those I was kind of reading in trades type of thing. But then when it abruptly ended, yep. Like there was no announcement, I'm like, well, now I gotta go back and read what led up to this.
I had to get the last few to be up to date.
Yeah. And then Invincible unfortunately ended a couple years ago, and I really loved Invincible. That was my favorite book, you know, probably for the last, I don't know, 10 years. Like, I, whenever it would come out, that would be the top one that I would read first. I absolutely loved it. And yeah, there, like, I used to read Saga all the time, but I kind of got behind. So I got to catch up with Saga. Black Science, that was one I collect. I think I read, like, the first, I don't know, 10 or 12 issues. It was really good. You know, it's a Rick Remender book. And I want to go back and the series is done, so I want to go back and read the whole thing. And Manhattan Projects was one that I used to really like when it came out.
I forgot about Manhattan Projects.
Yeah, I used to read, you know, it in issue form. But I think I want to go back and, like, get them digitally. Like, I'm waiting for them to go on sale so I can just go back and buy them, all the graphic novels, and then read them on my tablet. And also, I should note, as of April 2020, McFarlane, Spawn, and Larson Savage Dragon continue as the longest-running creator-owned titles by Image Comics, by the Image Comic partners, with Spawn over 305 issues and Savage Dragon over 245 issues. So, yeah. Image Comics continues, and I don't think it's going anywhere anytime soon.
No.
All right, well, let's move on real quickly to our last two segments of the episode, and we'll start with Brain Candy. So this is the segment where we discuss something that we've been watching or read or so on and so forth. So, Kevin, what do you have for Brain Candy this week?
So, leading up to the May 15th final season on Netflix, I finally finished season 4 of She-Ra on Netflix.
Mm.
The She-Ra and the Princesses of Power reboot.
Yep.
Season 4 was a slow start. 13 episodes, I believe. Slow start. Took me a while. I was watching, like, one, and then I'd wait a couple days and watch another. I'm like, I'm just not into it. And then finally, once all the pieces were in place and it started going, I'm like, oh my gosh. And I'm looking at the clock. I'm like, I do not want to stay up for 3 more hours to finish this. I'm seriously debating it. So I actually split it up into 2 nights. honestly probably the best action cartoon of the last few years. Phenomenal world building idea. Looking at the overall story of the cartoon is relationships by far. Relationships for, you know, I don't want to say intimate or involved because it's still a kid's cartoon, so it never goes like that far, but just who you're attracted to, we'll say. But then relationships with parents, with children, with mentors, with peers, with a relationship with yourself even as you grow. Because there's scenes in this where I'm like, you're about to make a bad decision, and I understand why you make that decision. And it's possible I've made a bad decision like that too, but you're about to make a really bad decision, and you just get involved in it, but all the characters ring true. And then as it leads up to the final battle, I was going nuts. Immediately we had to watch the trailer for season 5. I'm like, there's a good chance of marathoning this in one day. There's a real good chance I am, because I want to see how it ends, but I also don't want to let it go. Here I am, 40-something-year-old, straight male, with family, and all I want is to buy a little She-Ra toy, because I like the show that much. Two characters specifically, I'm like, I wish there was a toy for it. I found out one had a toy, but it was from that Super 8 company, so it was like $100 when it came out. And they did dolls, because, you know, it's She-Ra, it's a quote girls cartoon, but they never did like action figures for it, and it's a shame, because I think my wife, if she likes it too, I think my wife would have gotten on board and like, yeah, let's get these figures if they're, you know, reasonable, 10 to 20 bucks a figure like most are. I think we'd have a whole collection, but I'm not buying, you know, $100 ones by any means.
I hear you.
It is loads of fun though. So good. I know people hate reboots and you know, whatever certain segments of comic and geek culture don't like. It's all there. It's all stuff for them to not like. But if you're not of that mindset, it is so good. Such a blast of a cartoon.
Excellent. That's one that's on my list. I got to get around to watching that. Well, for Brain Candy, for me this week, talking about Westworld Season 3. It just finished on HBO, which took me by surprise because they only did 8 episodes this year. I'm pretty sure it was like the first 2 seasons were 10 episodes. So this one felt it went by really fast. I kind of wish they would have just called this Future World. Because, you know, for people that don't know, like, this is based on the Michael Crichton novels, or he did a novel called Westworld. I'm not sure if he did one called Future World, but I know they did a movie back in the 70s. They did Westworld, and then they did Future World. And essentially, this season is basically would have been Future World, you know, like, or it's Future World in the sense that this takes place, the 95% of this season takes place in the, using air quotes, the real world, which is, I think, like 2050 or 2060, which is, a you know, our future, right? So you got hover cars, you got, you know, robots walking around. It's very, very futuristic, and I think that's what they were going for. I wish they would have just called it Future World. This season, I didn't think was as good. Like, Westworld, the first season just blew me away. Like, I was so impressed, so amazed. It was such a good first season. There were so many, you know, revelations. Anthony Hopkins was on, I think, pretty much every episode in the first season, and he was absolutely amazing. Season 2 was okay. It, you know, less Anthony Hopkins. He was only on a little bit of it. But the other characters kind of, you know, grew out of that, and it was okay. So this season, was also okay. Like, I wouldn't say this was awesome. Like, I mean, there was some definitely some awesome parts to it. But I don't know. It just seemed to go by so fast, and it didn't. It was good, but it didn't wow me the way the season one of Westworld did. And they're really setting up, you know, this, you know, dark dystopian world-ending scenario. With humans fighting AI. Like, it's very, very Terminator reminiscent. I think that's what's going to be happening in season four, because it has been renewed for season four for sure. I think the plan is that season five is going to be the last season. And this season that just came out, they just had Aaron Paul, who played Jesse Pinkman on Breaking Bad, join the series, and he was really good. He was a fine addition to the show. And I'll continue watching it. I mean, I don't think this is the worst show ever. I don't think this was a terrible season by any stretch of the imagination. Definitely wasn't what I was expecting. But hopefully season four we can get back to putting more Westworld in Westworld. Because this season, the irony is, the show's called Westworld, but 95% of it, like I said, didn't actually take place in Westworld. So, it's kind of silly to me. That'd be like having I heard today, and I did not know this. Apparently, Star Trek Enterprise, its first season, they intended it to take place completely on Earth. It was going to be, the first season of Enterprise was going to be about them building the Enterprise and them assembling their crew. Basically, it was like the whole season would have been like the first episode. Except it ends with them going into space. And to me, that's just stupid. You know, like that's...
For like a 20-something, you know, 22, 24, like most seasons are, that's too much.
Oh, yeah.
I could honestly see like 4 or 5. I could see stretching it out, but a whole season, that's too much.
Yeah, that would have been crazy. And yeah, obviously they didn't do it because UPN said, no. No, you guys, if this is going to be a Star Trek show, it has to be in space. And as it should. But anyway, let's move on to our Enders segment. And I have absolutely nothing this week. But Kevin, I know you have some stuff for Enders.
All right. So I'll do the quick one that I told you about on our pre-show. And then I'll ask the comic one.
Okay.
The comic industry one. So the quick one, there's a big rumor right now that Becky Lynch, current WWE Raw Women's Champion, first woman to win in the main event of WrestleMania, held the title for over a year, becoming a big crossover star. But the rumor is that she is going to, or maybe already has, filmed an appearance in a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie. So speculation has begun. Hmm. Okay, who?
Yep.
Early 30s at most, maybe late 20s. Obviously athletic wrestler. Red hair, has a thick Irish accent. So that could limit the acting. Don't know. Now, I remember, oh my gosh, GSP, George St. Pierre of UFC, is going to be in a Marvel movie. And it turned out he was Batroc in Captain America 2, but barely referred to as Batroc, not in any costume, was just like, hey, this guy's a good fighter that Cap has to go up again. So it was almost like he was the boss for one level of a video game,
yep,
but not for the entire video game.
Yeah.
But everyone was excited and ended up not being, you know, much of anything. So it could just be that. But I'm trying to think of, like, where stuff is going, what characters are coming in and all. With her being Irish, if I thought for a second the X-Men were coming soon and they were going to have Siren, that would make a lot of sense. But then you have to have Banshee before that. So kind of doesn't fit unless you had like 100 mutants show up at once. I'm leaning towards, I think she'd be good in a Spider-Man movie as older, powered, maybe an influence on him, maybe inspired by him, who knows? Maybe Spider-Man becoming aware of a larger world of superheroes. I mean, I know he's been in Avengers, Infinity War, Endgame.
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem like Marvel's been, you know, there's a lot of wink and a nod of there's more heroes than we've seen on camera. You know, there seems to be certain things said and implied to set up, you know, later movies or TV shows or whatever. But I think you could have her as Spider-Woman easily.
That would be cool.
And I'm leaning towards the original one, but she could be either. Mm-hmm. I was originally thinking Black Cat, but if you do Black Cat, you really need the romance storyline with Spider-Man, though.
Yeah.
But I think her coming in as Spider-Woman, if you want to do Spider-Woman and Captain Marvel as friends, which the early 2000s Avengers title really played up on, and their solo series played up on as well, you could have that tie into the Captain Marvel movie. If I thought for a second, and I know there's the Southern accent, but just basing this on looks alone, if I thought for a second they were going to do Rogue as an old, as not a teenager, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But because there's also a big rumor now that Rogue will be the main bad guy in Captain Marvel 2.
Hmm.
And it makes sense for the comics. It makes a lot of sense.
Oh yeah.
Could be very interesting.
Interesting. So I just want to jump in real quick, because when you started talking about Marvel and stuff, it made me think of something I did read today real quick. Apparently Michael Bay wants to do a reboot of the Inhumans for Marvel's cinematic. And, like, I'm okay with that. You know, if you're going to do a reboot of anything that's already been done, what they did with the Inhumans was not that great. You know, like, Anson Mount was on it. You know, I love Anson Mount, but it was just didn't look good. Like, I didn't actually watch it. Like, I just saw clips of it, and I was like, no, I can't do this. And the Inhumans have never been one of the properties I really cared about anyway. So if Michael Bay is going to do anything, I wouldn't mind him doing something like this. Because, I mean, at this point, what do you have to lose? You know, with the Inhumans.
True, but I want him reined in.
Yeah.
Like, if the Inhumans are going, because they would fight someone.
Yeah.
Of course. Deviants, whoever. They would have to fight someone. It's a Marvel movie. It happens. I would like to be able to tell one Inhuman from the next, and the group of them, apart from their bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
Which Transformers has shown me he does not do.
That and his take on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was not that good.
True. I mean, there's a reason why people love the Bumblebee movie more than the previous Transformers movies.
Mm-hmm. And I would think with Kevin Feige running things that he would keep him under control. But anyway, Kevin...
He could have a cool vision, but yeah. No, it's fine.
I was just going to ask you what your last item is for
Endless. So, finally, is currently it's looking like comics will come back. DC's trickling out now with their own distributor deal, but it looks like overall comics, Marvel, Image, Dark Horse, everyone else, will start trickling back about May 20th, and then build up, release more and more. At some point the last week of May, there should be new previews out, which will be books for either July or August, and then a regular schedule from there. Now, it's a risk, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But this gets all the comic companies working again. It gets the printers working again. It gets the shipping working again. It gets the distributors working again. It gets the comic shops while they may not be able to be open and have multiple people shopping, most have figured out a way to do subscriptions, mail order, curbside pickup, call in an order, something. And the way comics are, with it being, you know, new issues every week, or new comics every week and a new issue of most of your favorites every month, you need that release once a week. If anything, I'd say comics are the biggest drug of all media, because you need to get your fix every week. You need to get your new ones. Yes, we all have tons of back issues we've never read. Tons. Mm-hmm. There's tons of back issues. You could call up your local comic shop and be like, hey, if you guys got the time, I'd really like to buy, you know, a few old issues of, I don't know, Fantastic Four, something like that, if you can pull a few for me. And I'll pay, you know, over cover, of course, because they're older. You could do that. You could go on Comixology or Marvel Unlimited or any of these apps and read stuff you've never even seen before for either free or for a very small amount. But we don't do that. We want to go and get the new, shiny, pretty, brand new comics that week.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the stores rely on us doing that as well. And the publishers rely on us doing that as well. Even to go as far as the Marvel, you know, the MCU and all, a lot of the stories and the sequels and all that they come up with is, oh, hey, what stories were popular for these characters? Those are the ones we should look at converting into movies. If we're not there to buy them, to make them popular, then that puts a wrench in this idea, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all together. I do think we need the comics to ship. I think if your store has been smart and looking ahead and figuring out a way to make it work in this world, it could help out. But I also feel like they're going to be shipping out a lot of books to areas that aren't open yet, that don't have a plan, that don't have a way to get these books to customers. Yeah, a lot of them have had a month to figure it out, but there's a shop in my area. Okay, there are two shops close to me. One I frequent, one's maybe like a once or twice a year thing, you know, just to see if they have something else. The one I frequent, it has, here's our hours where someone will be there, call ahead, let us know what you're picking up, we'll bring it out to you, do a credit card over the phone, or I'll take the cash and come back, mask, gloves, everything.
Mm-hmm.
They got it set up. It's very impressive to come up with this idea so quickly. The other shop just is completely closed up, not doing a thing, and just launched a GoFundMe for thousands upon thousands of dollars. I was like, you both had an equal amount of time to figure something out. And the one that is failing is the brand new one. That you would think, being brand new, would have, you know, it'd be easier to adapt to newer ideas, not have someone, you know, stuck in their ways, like a chef that's been around 30 years. But it's the old one that's adapting to it. So that's just my area, times the whole country, you know, Canada too and all.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these comics aren't going to go out. I see, like, it already looks like Batman is not coming out as part of this, because that's going to be the first full appearance of Punchline, I think, that everyone was going nuts about, this new character.
Yeah.
They're going to want to get that out. But I see a lot of these issues, if a character breaks out a couple years from now, or it turns out a new artist started on a book, or whatever it might be, are going to have super low print runs and are going to become very valuable within 5 years.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting times. And the whole DC releasing books on Tuesday thing, I know that's pissed off a lot of comic book stores, because, you know, like, these guys have routines. You know, it's just better to have...
Your customers have routines.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know, like, if DC, I don't know what they're thinking. I guess they want to get a jump on the market, I guess. But, you know, and I know some...
Well, and Marvel did Marvel did a jump this week. They released Dr. Aphra issue 1 yesterday.
Yeah, I see that.
As we record yesterday.
Yeah.
On Star Wars Day, May the 4th. And it doesn't come out physically till the end of this month. But that's a one-off for a popular thing on a day for that franchise. If there was an Avengers Day and they released an Avengers comic, it would make sense.
Yeah.
You know, that's a one-off. Whereas DC's like, screw it, we'll take two giant comic shops and have them send our books out. All right. So everyone's got to create new accounts, have a new date and all. Like, I think by the time we're back to, quote, normal or Diamond, you know, gets going again, most of your comic stores are going to say, I'm not buying through three people. I'd rather have one bill and one shipment come in and put it all out on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I'm not dealing with it. And DC's going to see so many comic shops just not dealing with it. It's not going to be worth it for them to support it anymore, and they're going to close it up.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. But I am glad that they're coming back, because...
I am too.
I mean, I'm slowly... Like, there's a lot that I've, you know, I've been not reading. Like, a lot that I got to catch up on. I'm caught up on all my single issues. Now I'm going back and reading all these trades and stuff, because I buy a lot of things digitally, as you know, especially when Comixology has really good sales. You know, to buy, you know, like five trades and it only cost me $20. Like, I mean, you can't go wrong, right?
No.
So, I mean, I'm currently catching up on the Immortal Hulk. That's probably like the newest of the graphic novels that I'm reading, and I'm going back and rereading. And like you mentioned, that Dr. Aphra, like, I'm behind on like about four of her trades. I had read the first three with when Kieran Gillen was writing it. So I might go back and read those other ones where it was the different writer. So we'll see. But it's good. I'm glad that the comic books are coming back. And
well, and, like, for me, for my interests, to be selfish, like, movies are going to come back. Mm-hmm. Movie theaters are going to come back, and everyone will be fine. Wrestling never stopped, and they'll be back to having crowds and all, and, you know, everyone will be around. There's a good chance, the longer this went, that comic shops disappeared. And without a place to sell your product, then the comic publishers go away too.
Yep.
You know, out of all the things we're interested in, that was the one that was close to, like, this. There's a chance that this might not last. So I'm glad to just get it out there. They're not going to make the money they made before. They're not going to make the sales, the quantity, anything. But it's better than nothing. It's enough to keep going.
Yeah. And I mean, for some of the comic book stores, they might see an increase in business just because their neighbors, you know, two blocks over may have went out of business. So they might be catching, you know, more business that way, unfortunately. But yeah, this was an industry that was not doing well prior to this, and yeah, it definitely got hit hard. But yeah, it's good to see it coming back.
Now, I'm guessing you weren't the one that spent $19,000 on the Jim Lee death sketch.
No, definitely not. If I had, I probably would not be on the podcast right now, because I would probably be dead. My wife would kill me.
He's not done yet with his 60 sketches in 60 days, but this so far is the highest sale, and I think it might hold that.
And what is it a sketch of?
It's death. Neil Gaiman's death from Sandman. Oh,
okay.
And it's just her head, but God, it's a beautiful drawing.
Oh, I imagine. Like, it'd probably be really cool.
He did a Scarecrow one that went up today or yesterday. That's incredible. But I'd say they've been averaging about 9,000, depending on the character. Like, some just weren't as popular, so they didn't sell for as high. But this one, in the first 8 hours, was up to $15,000. I was like, oh, that's going for a lot of money.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But yeah, he's doing 60 sketches in 60 days. They're all selling for crazy money, and all the money goes to comic shops to help them out right now.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And I don't know, Darwin Cook bought all the books from his local comic shop and had them sent out to the people on the poll list, and Kevin Smith bought everyone's pull list at his shop and had them mailed out to people.
Oh, okay. What? Didn't Darwin Cook die?
No.
Who am I thinking of?
Or did I say the wrong name?
Yeah, I could swear. I'm Googling it right now. I think Darwin Cook passed away. Did he? Didn't he not?
Darwin Cook did. Who the heck am I thinking of?
Yes. Unfortunately, yeah, Darwin Cook did pass away in 2016. You're probably thinking of the Mad Men creator. Okay, this is making for really bad podcasting. He did a run on the Silver Surfer. What's his name? Okay, I'm looking this up real quick. Mad Men creator. Comic. Because I'm sure that's who you're thinking of. Also an Image comic, I would point out there. Mike Allred. Is that who you're thinking of?
No, it wasn't Mike Allred. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I can't remember who did this.
I don't know. But yeah, again, another Image comic. Sorry, dear listener. But yeah, Oh, it's all good. It's all good. But no, that's awesome that these comic book creators are doing this for comic shops. And I think Rob Liefeld is helping out and doing good work.
Donnie Cates. Sorry.
Donnie Cates. Oh, okay.
Donnie Cates, who writes Venom. He did it for his shop.
Ah, okay.
All right. So it was a D and the C name, which is what got me going.
Yep. No problem. I thought maybe I was losing it. I was like, oh man, I swear he passed away.
No, you're absolutely right. My mistake.
But and I've done that before. Like I remember one time years ago, we did a comic book podcast and we were talking about Ron Lim. And for some reason, I thought Ron Lim passed away, and everyone was like, no, he's. I think at the time he was doing Mega Man comics for Archie or something. And, I was completely mistaken. It was one of those things, like, you hear something and then you just assume it's the truth, and then it's not the truth at all. In that instance, that's what happened.
If anyone wants to listen in the Pop Culture Pub archives, they could go back to the Mandela Effect one.
Yes, that is true. Yeah. And speaking of the Mandela Effect, I don't know if we talked about this. When we did that episode, but the Hadron Collider, supposedly all of this started happening after they did their thing with the Hadron Collider and nothing happened.
No, you did mention it. Did and I fell down a, I fell down an internet rabbit hole like the next day looking up stuff. I'm like, it could be crazy. It could just be tinfoil. But if there's a chance it's real, this is the scariest thing I've ever read in my life.
Oh, where we actually all died that day and a new world was created in its image?
Yeah.
Yeah, that it definitely makes you think. It's like, am I really me? Or am I just a copy of me? It's like that episode of Rick and Morty where, what's her name? His daughter thinks that she might actually be a clone.
Yeah.
And not the... Beth, where she's actually a clone and not the real Beth. Anyway. We could keep going on, but we can't. So let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. Kevin, where can we find you, sir?
Okay, you can find me across the internet on my own blog, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, because why not? It's what half people are doing while they're quarantined. Everything is at Masked Library, and you'll know it's me when you see a picture of a VHS with a mask. I'm also co-host of another podcast over on the Retro Network, and that is The House Show, where we are going through classic WWF pay-per-view in your house And when we're all done with that, we're already discussing what the next series will be.
Excellent. Excellent. I also do a blog. It's randomnerdness.blogspot.com. And I am on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at ChrisLock1701. And I just want to throw this out there that I did get a message from Jason. Unfortunately, couldn't make it this evening. He was really looking forward to recording this episode. But he will be doing a blog about Image Comics and what he was going to discuss. So be sure to go check out Jason's blog.
His blog, Nerdy Life of Mine.
Yes.
And it's an easy subscribe to as well. I usually get an update in my email when he's got a new post.
Excellent. Yes, nerdylifeofmine.com. And it's also linked to our to the website at Podbean. So if you want more information on Jason, just go to thepopculturepub.podbean.com. All right. So on behalf of myself, Chris Lockhart, and my co-host Kevin Decent, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub podcast. This was our Image Comics discussion episode, and we will see you again in the not-too-distant future.